Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello and welcome to the Cinefix Top 100. It's not a moon, it's a space station, and we are caught in the tractor beam until we watch 100 of the greatest movies of all time. I'm Clint Gage, and joining me as always, the fear keeping Cinefix's local systems in line, Alex Stedman. Alex, how you doing?
I'm good. I have a good feeling about this, I'll say.
About?
About the episode.
Oh, great.
Not a bad
as
feeling.
As opposed to a bad feeling.
Exactly.
I gotcha. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And also, of course, Nick the Lounge Singer, Michael Calabro.
How's it going? How's it going, Clint?
It's going, man. How are you?
Good.
Good. Great. Good. So this week, three episodes into our Community season, how are we feeling about Community as a theme? Does Dan's algorithm get any credit for it at all?
I will say Community is a broad theme.
It is.
Like, you can find a lot of movies that
you
are about
fit a
groups.
Whole galaxy.
We're going to do our best to do just that today. But we're visiting a wretched hive of scum and villainy by talking about Star Wars.
Were you on a star cruiser?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
What's this?
What is what? He asked you a question. What is that?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
The original Star Wars. If you need to be more specific about which Star War, the one that was called Star Wars.
Close your browser right now and please leave.
Get out of here.
Get out.
Get out. No, Star Wars, that was subsequently called Episode 4, A New Hope.
When was it titled that? Like, was it? It was just before Empire Strikes Back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which that's one of the things I want to talk about, too, is the relentless retconning that started almost immediately with this movie.
Lover of pencils.
Yes. Lover
George,
of erasers.
Yeah.
Pencils with erasers.
George Lucas.
No, we'll for sure talk some more about that, but this one is strange. So 1977, the original Star Wars, obviously written and directed by George Lucas, it gave us Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
Darth Vader, one of the all-time great villains.
The
cuts
all-time.
Cuts a very intimidating silhouette.
Let's just call him the all-time great villain.
Okay.
He's up there.
You
want to
do
I mean, he's up there.
I'll do that.
I believe he was on a movie list or two making that argument over the years.
The silhouette.
This is a movie that, like, it's, and we were talking a little bit about this beforehand, but it's hard to prep for this.
Actually, it's quite easy.
Is it?
I think what you're trying to say is it's quite easy to prep, but what is going to be difficult is it's going to be hard to say anything new.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This, I mean, we can skip straight to the pedigree of it. I mean, we can talk about some of the nuts and bolts of like the Academy Award nominations. Got 10 Academy Award nominations. It was nominated for Best Picture, Director, Supporting Actor, Original Screenplay. Got wins for Art Direction, Costume Design, Film Editing, Original Score, Sound and Visual Effects. Got a Special Achievement Award for Ben Burtt. John Dykstra got another one for the Dykstra Flex.
Deservedly so.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a landmark movie, and to say that the movie changed things for the entire business, I think is probably an understatement.
I'd also make the argument that this singular movie probably had the most profound effect on our list as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Because while this is Star Wars, right? Like, we're products of the 90s. You know, we're children of the 90s. And ILM would have really hit its stride in the 80s and 90s. And ILM touches a shitload of the movies, at least on my list.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's like that for you, Clint, and it's like that for you, Alex. So ILM just wouldn't exist if it wasn't for this little sci-fi western.
The work that they did in the late 70s, and then like they kind of splintered into a couple of groups after some of the Star Wars stuff, because George Lucas went up to San Francisco, and guys like John Dykstra, they stayed down in LA and continued working. So like they spread out a little bit, and they worked on everything.
Yeah,
like, I mean, we've talked about it. We talked about them in our Raiders episode. We talked about them. I mean, some of these names are people that we talked about in Terminator 2. Like, these guys that worked on just every cool visual effect that you can think of.
Yeah, we'll talk
from Star Wars to frankly, close to present day.
Not even close to present day. Like, we can't talk about modern Star Wars without ILM.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it was the birth of the modern day, like, VFX industry. Like, even when you talk to VFX people, especially, like, and I've been doing that a lot with, because they're unionizing right now, they'll say, like, it's been around since 1977 when Star Wars was, like, that's right. When it was created. Like,
you remember Star Wars? That was where it started.
Yeah.
Star Wars. So, again, this is another one of these movies where the legacy of this movie, the pedigree of this movie is everything that's come since, right? Like, it obviously, it box office, blah, 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 like, all of that was huge. And we could rattle off a whole bunch of numbers, but that's not really what matters. Like, the idea that this is, you know, it's obviously still ongoing. It's huge IP and constantly change. The canon is constantly changing and constantly growing and evolving and all of that stuff. And it all started right here with the original Star Wars.
Well, that's what's so interesting about Star Wars, because when you look at, like, the franchises that we all cover every day, when you look at Marvel and, like, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, those all have source material. Like, this is the source material. It's, like, one of the few original film franchises, and it's, like, the biggest.
It is strange to think of Star Wars as original IP.
It is, you though. Know? Yeah, because, like, now it is. Right. Yeah. But this right here, what we're talking about today, is original, which, like, it's not a unknown fact, but it kind of blows my mind when I think about it. Because, I grew up with, like, Harry Potter and stuff, which is based on the books. This is not.
No.
All from George Lucas's dome.
Straight off the dome.
Straight off the dome.
For better or worse.
Well, for both.
For both.
Yeah.
For better and worse, I would say.
I think there's another fun thing about, you know, there's the famous stories about the business side of this movie, too. Like, he famously forwent one of his paychecks so that he could keep the rights to the sequels and the
merchandise.
The merchandise.
The sweetest plum.
The story about the bet between he and Spielberg with Close Encounters. And Spielberg apparently still gets 2.5% of Star Wars, which is hilarious because, you know, for as bold as it was and as confident as it was of George Lucas to bet on himself with that merchandising rights thing, to then turn around and be like, I don't know, Close Encounters is going to make more money than Star Wars. And Spielberg's like, I'll take that bet.
Yeah. Well, Spielberg needs that, so. You
yeah.
Know.
No,
Spielberg knew what was up. He was like one that was a fan in that, like.
It was that rough, like, cut screening.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. That, like, legendary screening. Yeah. It's like him, De Palma, and, like, what, Scorsese?
I think. Was it? Probably. I feel like they were all buddies. Coppola, maybe?
Yeah.
They were
definitely
all such friends, such good friends, those
hanging
guys.
Out.
Young, new Hollywood.
Yeah.
Just talking about, you know, going to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Complaining about the scroll.
Complaining. I mean, all that to say, like, what do you guys want to talk about with Star Wars? Because, like, I get the feeling this is probably going to end up being pretty, pretty high on all of our lists. I wouldn't be surprised if it's on all four of the lists. I wouldn't be, like, you know, it's going to be... It's hard to be right, exist in this moment, the ages that we are. Granted, we're 10, 11 years apart, whatever it is. And to not have this movie as just part of your vocabulary.
I also think it's interesting, too, right? Because it's like our fandom of Star Wars. We have now grown up in what will forever be the weirdest part of, like, the history of Star Wars, because we grew up in the 90s. I was born in 87. There wasn't a Star Wars movie that came out until I was, like, what, 13?
As the elder statesman here, I was born in 82.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was one. I was one when Return of the Jedi was on screen.
We're
so
really nailing all the generations, too, because I'm not that much younger than you. I was born in 92. And I honestly didn't get into Star Wars until the sequel trilogy. So I feel like we hit, like, all the...
Because I just... And I think, like, that kind of plays into our love of it as well, because... There was never anything new when I was growing up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, there was. It was all the auxiliary stuff, right? So we had, like, the extended universe, which is now technically Legends. We had the video games and things like that. But, like, it was always just Star Wars in, like, pristine, immaculate condition. It hadn't been – he hadn't even touched it yet. Yeah. With, like, the special editions.
Oh, but just, he had sort of.
He doesn't know how not to.
Right. But no, so, you know, growing up, it was, because also the thing that happened when I was a kid was VHS, right? So VHS and Beta and all that stuff was sort of technically invented in the 70s, but it wasn't really in everybody's homes until, like, mid 80s, 84, 85, something like that. So when I was a little kid, some of my earliest memories are, you know, we had to rent the whole VCR, Like, okay. We rented the whole VCR to watch movies. And so, like, I grew up constantly having Star Wars tapes around. And, like, I was still a big Star Wars fan, even though there wasn't anything new coming. Like, I had only missed it by a couple of years. There wasn't anything new coming out until the special editions that came out in the 90s. But there was, you know, there were the Nintendo games. And, you know, I'll never forget being furious at the Super Nintendo version of Return of the Jedi because it was so goddamn hard. Like, I found it impossible to play, and I gave up.
That is not unusual for old Nintendo games based on movies. Like, I remember the Lion King game was,
stupid hard.
I can't explain how much of my mind was blown when I played the, like, Battle of Hoth on Shadows of the Empire, that N64 game. Like, that was just, like, but to your point, right? Like, the VHS plays a huge part in, like, the fandom of this, because I think the Star Wars trilogy, without a doubt, is the three movies I have seen the most amount of times in my life. Because when I was growing up, my grandma didn't have cable. And, like, when she would watch me while my parents, while my mom was at work during the summers, I would go to my grandma's house. I would take the trilogy with me. And I knew that if I started A New Hope in the morning, by the time Return of the Jedi ended, that was the end of the day. And my mom would be here, like, to pick me up
pretty soon. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, all right, like, I just got to get through the Star Wars trilogy.
Star Wars trilogy will get you through the day at grandma's.
My time at grandma's is done.
Yeah.
And you know what? Time well spent.
But I will say, it's like, it's now gotten to a point where it's, like, hard not to be into Star Wars. Like, there are certainly people who are not, but it's like, if you're not, you're missing out on so much. Like, the reason I got into Star Wars was because again, like, I got into it a little later in life than a lot of people, but it was like 2013 and we were talking about The Force Awakens. I was like, I want to be psyched for The Force Awakens. So I did the Star Wars thing and got really into it. Like, I could see a lot of people doing that even today with everything.
I mean, that's part of the conversation with how much Star Wars we have right now, right? Like, you know, because we've already talked about the distance between the original trilogy and the prequels is what, 16 years? It was 83 to 99, I guess. Where there was just nothing new.
Official.
And then right. But then all of a sudden that trailer where, you know, you see I had the poster on the poster of Jake Lloyd as Anakin and the shadow he's casting is the Darth Vader silhouette.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I gotta have that poster. It was one of these things that it wasn't even up to me. Like, I needed that poster. Like, I mean, going that long between movies. And then again, but from 2005, I guess, was Revenge of the Sith?
Four.
Somewhere in there.
2004. I was a junior in high school when that came out.
And which I got to see it early on the Fox lot. And
cool.
That is dope.
That felt like I was the coolest person on the planet. I got to see,
and you were in that.
And I was not a fan of the prequel. I was like, these are dumb. I hate them. But then, you know, going to Revenge of the Sith early, I was like, I'm there. Like, I'm leaving.
That's at least the best prequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's the one that I'm like kind of mess with.
If you have to watch one again.
Yeah, you watch Revenge
of the Sith. But that's the thing. Like, I, you know, at this point, I think the point I was trying to get around to is like generationally, like there are different, you know, versions of Star Wars fans. Like there's some people that love it all, but then there are a lot of, it depends on your entry point, right? It depends on when you were, you know, when were you nine?
Yeah,
like what was the nearest Star Wars to you, and that was your entry point, you know. So
I feel like there are people who like go back and re-educate themselves, like I did. But yeah, I mean, there are some people who just, there's a lot of people who start with the sequel trilogy, like a lot of kids.
Oh, there's a ton of kids,
yeah,
that like just came up with the sequel trilogy, and I mean, like they're single-handedly responsible for just like changing the critical reception of those films around it. Right now, they are definitely looked at as beloved.
Yeah. You're talking about the prequels?
Yeah, I'm talking about the prequels.
Oh, the prequels.
Yeah, right? Like, the critical consensus around that has, like, changed. Because of the Utes.
I saw it happen. Yeah, I agree. Because, like, I feel like none of my friends liked them even a little bit.
By the time I was 13, I was old enough to understand that movies are bad.
Movies can be bad.
Yeah, like, movies can be bad, and these are most certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
That was right around the time where I realized that the stuff I thought was cool about Star Wars is apparently not the stuff George Lucas thought was cool about
Star
Wars.
What did you think was cool?
Han Solo.
Yeah.
As opposed to
Luke Skywalker.
Trade blockades.
I'm not gonna lie, man. Celibate
midichlorians didn't do it for you.
Yeah.
Celibate priest samurai just did not seem cool to me growing up.
No.
But like the fucking handsome dude that's just rolling around proud as hell of his shitty car that like he has like you know, like he's just like, yeah, I work on this in the weekends.
Yeah.
And he just has the fucking coolest dog ever, and it's just like, yo, what's up? This is my dog, Chewie. We're just rolling around.
I didn't realize you were referring to Chewie for some reason. I was like, he had a dog?
Yeah. Yo, what's up?
Yeah.
This is my dog, Chewie.
This is my walking carpet, Chewie.
He's cute, right?
Yeah.
He can also kick your ass.
He can
I taught him
your
how to
arms
use a crossbow.
Off.
Oh, yeah.
Kid, I've flown from one side of this galaxy to the other. I've seen a lot of strange stuff, but I've never seen anything to make me believe there's one all-powerful force controlling everything. There's no mystical energy field controls my destiny. It's all a lot of simple tricks and nonsense.
The other thing I like about Han Solo is like he's like the only one that is morally ambiguous, right? Like he's just like he's not like I want to save the world. He's just like, yeah, where's my money?
This movie really leans into that too. Like he has his good hero's arc, but this one he's like he has
the best arc because he's the only one that actually has.
He has
one.
The only arc.
Yeah, he has the only actual arc. He's just like, what's up? I'm hanging out in this bar, right? Like, you need me to take you somewhere? Fine, $10,000 up front.
Well, like, and that's why like people like I don't even know if we need to spend time on the Han shot first thing, but I think that
we
is
do.
What
we can.
We do. We
because I listen again. I think the story of Star Wars, to me anyway, is like how thoroughly and often it has been changed since it hit the screen to begin.
Fundamentally
with.
Changes the character Han Solo because I think that definitely plays into his arc, which we're sitting here talking about how it's the only arc in the damn movie, and it's just like that movie opens with him killing a man in cold blood, you know, doing a job, smuggling some people to a planet. For money, kind of hitting on this woman, and then in the end realizing, you know, they were nice. I'm going to try and save them. Maybe I do need friends.
Well, only after Luke, by the way, like whips out every single guilt trip in the book. He like tries everything. He's like, and I get that is why people get so passionate about it, because if you start off with a guy who would just shoot first, the where we end up with him actually being a hero is such a stronger journey. Whereas if you have someone who shoots just because he's being shot at, that's not an inherently villainous thing.
It flattens the whole thing out.
Yeah,
it really does. And I think at the time when it happened too, when all of a sudden Greedo shoots first, like you're looking at Han Solo over the course of like the Han Solo you know in Return of the Jedi. Weighed in on the decision to change him at the beginning of Star Wars, you know, which is, I mean, that's only a thing that can happen if you just continually tweak the whole thing instead of like growing a character in a different direction. It's like, well, I'm going to tweak the character back here, which is such a fascinating thing because that doesn't happen. Like Star Wars is really one of the few, I mean, I guess Marvel now, but it's, you know, it's so recent that it hardly counts, but it's one of the few things where you can look at all of the media that's ever been made out of this and just kind of pick and choose what you want to be real or change something that happened back here. And like, you know, I mean, just to bring it back to the original Star Wars here, like it was just Star Wars in the original with the credit roll, just said Star Wars and that's it. And then episode 4, A New Hope was added to the credits in like, I think it was 80, 81. I've seen several different versions of it. It was for the re-release ahead of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, they did
put it back in theaters.
Theaters
in like 80, 81, 82, 83. They did it for Return too, I think.
Yeah.
But before, in the lead up to Empire, they put it back out in theaters and it was episode 4, A New Hope. I saw some other stories about, you know, you poke around, you hear stories, but they published the script at one point as a book that you could buy, and that book said episode 4, A New Hope, in like the late 70s, but that was like unofficical or something. There's weird things. What's fascinating now is like there's just no way to know for sure.
I will say though,
you can't even trust George Lucas.
Well,
no.
And you also hear stories about Mark Hamill on set asking, why are we doing episode 4? And George Lucas having to explain it. And then there's other guys that were like, no, the script never had episode 4 in it at all. We never talked about episode 4 until story meetings for episode 5, you know, like it was. So it depends on who you ask and what their memory of it is. And it's this big, weird, who knows? And it doesn't really matter because they made the changes. And it's just fascinating that like from the very first opportunity he had to change something, he did. And he has not stopped since.
And it was, but the change was a bold change to call it not episode one, but episode four. Like, what are we doing? No, right? That's going to confuse everybody.
Like, I wanted people to feel like they were in the middle, like they'd missed something. And I was like, why?
I mean, that's kind of brilliant. That's like that old like joke. It's like, well, we released up pigs in the school and we had them one and three.
Yeah.
So then everybody spent the day looking for two.
Well, and it is like, because you can tell that he was like throughout this movie that he's hinting at a deeper backstory. But at the same time, you can almost kind of tell that like he probably didn't know that Anakin was Darth Vader.
Definitely
and
not,
he kind of just got away with it because the lines were kind of
big. Where do you guys fall on that? I mean, I think there's a big question with this movie in particular, with the first movie, about like how much do you think George Lucas was planning on stuff versus how much did he have to retcon? Because like, I think there's just no way. There's just no way that he had nine movies planned.
No, no. He maybe had
like
two.
I think he probably had some ideas because, like, you know, the original crawl to the rough cut screening, the infamous rough cut screening where Brian De Palma shredded him for having just all of this. Like, there was stuff about the Republic and there was stuff about the Jedi and the Sith and all of that stuff in the original crawl. So he had some notion of like a bigger world, but like, the movie itself is so broadly like archetypal, right? Like it's like standard Jungian stuff, like on down to the costume design. You know, it's like these are bad guys, these are good guys. Here's the hero's journey, and here's like, and it's paint by numbers in a handful of ways, but it's like, you know, fresh new territory
where he chose to flourish really mattered.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Like he embellished in the right spots, and like so, but because it's that broadly archetypal, like. He was just, it's like, you did it.
I mean, you did it, man.
You made a universally relatable space opera. Like, good work, dude. That's incredible. There's no way that he was like, oh, and by the way, Darth Vader's going to be his dad next, and then they're going to be siblings next.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, he definitely didn't know there were siblings.
Definitely didn't know the sibling thing. And if he had all three of those movies planned out, you mean to tell me the best idea he could come up with is like they spend all this time like building a Death Star. This fucking shitty kid from a desert planet blows it up almost single-handedly, and then by the third movie, they're like, "Well, let's do it again.
Let's just build another one."
Like, well, I can't believe how much he kind of got away with too, because like even again going back to like the Anakin Darth Vader thing, like. Those lines still work with him being like Anakin, Darth Vader, but it's like
they're so vague,
right?
Yeah.
But like, I can't believe he got away with it. Like, it's borderline more deep than it should be,
right?
How did my father die?
A young Jedi named Darth Vader, who was a pupil of mine until he turned to evil, helped the Empire hunt down and destroy the Jedi Knights. He betrayed and murdered your father.
They're so purposefully vague and nondescript that it could mean anything. And it has turned out to have meant literally whatever we need right now. Like, what do we need next? And I think, you know, it's fascinating to look at this movie and then, because I have a harder time watching this movie now specifically because of the Obi-Wan series. Like, I normally, I'm like, if anybody, like, a sequel ruins I'm like, shut up. You can just watch the original one again. But there's something about this one that I'm like, okay, see, now you've made these people look stupid. Because, like, the help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And you fought with my father in the Clone Wars. And I'm like, no, you guys, like, hung out a lot 9 years ago.
That's how I feel about Solo. Like, I genuinely think that the Solo movie ruined Star Wars for me. Because, like, Solo ends with him just being like, yeah, no, take the fuel, give it to this rebellion you're starting.
He has his arc before.
Yeah, he has his arc before A New Hope, because like the Solo movie takes place months before A New Hope, right?
Like, something like that,
like,
yeah.
A short, in the grand scheme of things, a reasonably short amount of time. And he has his selfless arc in that movie, which I think is like the greatest arc in the original movie, which is like, I'm not in this for your rebellion. I expect to be well paid, right? Like, one of the best lines in the movie just like solidifies Han Solo as like the ambiguously gray area, as the guy just trying to get by in a war zone, right? And 35 years later, 40 years later, they make a movie where he has the same arc canonically slightly before
like 6 months prior.
Yeah, six months prior, as just like, like Woody Harrelson is like leaning over him, just being like, "Oh, I taught you so well. You shot me first."
But Cal, you learn why he's named Solo.
Yeah. Yeah, we found out where he got that gun.
One movie that actually makes A New Hope better is Rogue One. Because like even when I'm watching it now, because I love Rogue One, and it's like when like Luke gets that shot, I'm like, well, thank you, Galen Erso. Like, I think that makes it a little more
Rogue
fun.
Rogue One and Andor. I think that I personally look at Cassian Andor as like a Marvel apology for what they have done to Han Solo. Because even like when you watch Rogue One, Andor's first scene is like them trapped in that alley and the only way out is up. And it, like he's just like, I'm sorry. And he just kills that spy and starts climbing. And that's like a very, very like that is a New Hope Han Solo move.
Calm down. Calm down. We'll be all right.
Like when I saw that in theaters, I'm like, great, we're back to this moral, like this ambiguous, like moral gray area where people do what needs to get done in order to like defend themselves from this, like the jackboot of the Empire.
Well, too, and I think one of the reasons why Rogue One and Andor work so well in the context is because they're not about these characters. Like, so like your qualm with Solo, I totally get. And now we're not like rewriting these characters' histories. We're writing about other characters, and we're building up the world that way.
Because it's an entire galaxy a long time ago, far, far away. Right. We got to stop talking about the same family.
Yeah, I also just don't think, you know, Jedi are that as interesting as like these people are down and out and are just trying to survive.
No, I think Space Wizards is even like too fun a name for what they are. Like, I don't think they're
kind of like, if I could use a D&D term, they're really like paladins almost, like where they're drawing on some kind of divine power. But yeah, it's not the most exciting thing.
You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hello, my name is Alison Larkin, and I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of the Jane Austen podcast. This podcast brings Jane Austen's stories to the 21st century, along with commentary from me and conversations with fascinating people who all share a love of Jane Austen. And of course, we had to start with none other than Pride and Prejudice. So join me as we embark on a journey through some of the most wonderful stories I know. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
I mean, I will say this too, like the fact that you can't really talk about A New Hope in a vacuum anymore. Is what's happened. Like, you can't talk about A New Hope without talking, because all of the changes that were made over the years, and some of the more recent changes, you know, like the McClunky, like what, some of these are just bafflingly completely needless. Like, why did you need to do that?
I don't know. You needed
because
McClunky.
So he says McClunky, and then they both shoot three times now. Is that they keep messing with this? I don't know.
Honestly,
I have no idea. But it's so hard to talk about the movie in a vacuum. But let's try for a minute, because that's theoretically what this episode is about. But like, I do think it's funny that, or it's interesting that the first 17, 18 minutes of this movie are C-3PO and R2-D2s.
I would venture to say that they're the main characters.
Yeah, for the first act,
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah,
like throughout the movie,
it's 15 to 20 minutes. It's somewhere in there. I'd have to look back at it again. But like, it's, you know, I mean, you get some of Leia and you get some of Darth Vader and you meet them.
Oh, just some of Darth Vader?
Yeah, honestly, just some of Darth Vader. Like, it's a cool scene, but it's just the one scene. And then the rest of the time we're following 3PO and R2 like into the desert. And he's like, you bucket of bolts. And like, they have their whole back and forth thing. And I do. What is he like? Don't call me a mindless philosopher. It's just... Like, that's what we're doing for the first 15 or 20 minutes of this movie, which, to think about where the franchise went, to immediately go back on me saying, like, let's only talk about this one movie, but like, to think about where the franchise went and like Luke being Obi-Wan and Yoda's grand plan to defeat the Empire someday in the future, to like the fact that he's too boring to even start the movie with.
Yeah. Incredible. Like, the fact that these two droids, one of which doesn't even speak English, like, they're, but like, it works though. Like, again, to like look at this in a vacuum, like, I continue to be impressed that like we're still so with these characters, and like by the time that one of the sand people shoots R2-D2, like, we've like grown to like him enough to be like, R2. Whoa. Yeah, it's
as
so
he's
sad.
Falling in. Yeah, exactly. I mean, but it's funny, like, thinking about watching this movie and Star Wars doesn't exist, right? Like, this is, you're just watching this movie and there's a space battle and there's explosions and there's escape pods and there's desert planets and there's robots trying to escape with something important clearly loaded in, because that princess in white, who's clearly a good guy because of just how she looks.
She's in white. Yeah.
Well, don't forget about the guy that's dressed all in black.
The guy that's
just,
dressed
like, choked
all
that guy
and threw him against the wall. Yeah. Find those plans. It's such efficient and exciting storytelling in that first 15 minutes, but the fact that we get the main characters are these two robots, that thinking about it now, and the fact that they were the entree into the entire galaxy far, far away, it started with 15 minutes of these two droids.
So do we want to talk about the edit now?
Yeah.
Because, right? This is the thing, right? To your point, right? It seems like so crazy, but apparently in the original, like, in like the like assembly cuts of this film, it cuts back and forth between like Luke doing his chores on Tatooine to like Darth Vader just, you know, boarding like this Leia's ship. And they talk about how like
there's this whole sequence back. It goes back and forth between Vader boarding the ship and then Luke like looking up and seeing it happen.
Yeah.
From so it's like the flashes in the sky and stuff like that are happening up there. He's like, what's happening? And then he's like running around talking to Biggs, being like, look up there. There's crazy stuff. What do you think? And he's like, I don't know.
He doesn't do anything of consequence, and it totally disrupts the vibe and like the building of tension and like establishing the villains. Like, it just totally ruins the tempo of the film. So like, Luke isn't needed at this point. And that's what it seems like Marsha Lucas figured out in the editing room. And like, to your point, that is what is one of the major saving graces of this film, because that act one, despite the fact that it does not involve the main character, it's,
I mean,
still
anybody
one
that you associate, like, R2 and C-3PO are iconic characters, but they're what? I mean, at minimum, like, fourth and fifth, right?
On the call sheet?
Yeah.
Well, and even just looking back at it now, like, rattle off some characters from Star Wars. And you got, like, Han, Luke, Leia, yeah, Darth Vader.
Obi-Wan.
I mean, did you get to, I mean, C-3PO and R2 are in there somewhere. Wow. They're in the top 10.
Yeah, they're mixed in with Chewie. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're side characters.
Yeah.
But in 1977, like, they were the whole movie for
20 minutes.
You follow
yeah.
them more
minutes.
Than anyone. Yeah. Like, we don't start with Luke. We don't start, I mean, in the copy that we got, like, I don't, but it was so smart because you don't really have much of a reason to care about Luke right away. Like that would have been such a stupid move.
To your point, right? It's not so much like you need someone to care about. It's that like, setting up the opposition. It's like, this, what we haven't shown you the hero yet, but whatever they are, this is what they're up against.
Well, and there's also something interesting to look at it in terms of how movies are cut to be movies as opposed to movies that are cut to set things up, right? Like, we run into that all the time, like movies that are overbaked,
especially now
with franchises and world building and interconnected this and that's, and like, you know, Wakanda Forever needs to set up Ironheart and all of this stuff. And like, you know, it's not quite apples to apples because this was the first movie, but this was the movie. If this movie didn't work, then you don't get anything else. Like, and who knows if he hadn't shown the movie to Brian De Palma and Brian De Palma made fun of him for how bad it was.
Ruthless.
Yeah. Like, if Brian De Palma hadn't made fun of George Lucas about how shitty this movie was, we probably don't have, maybe we don't have Disney Plus right now. Who knows? Like, I mean, there's a butterfly effect thing that happens there that, Star Wars being what it is.
If De Palma didn't make fun of his friend.
Yeah, exactly. If De Palma weren't brutally honest.
And then put in the legwork. He rewrote the scroll.
Yeah, he rewrote the opening scroll? Opening crawl.
Yeah.
To be like half as long. No, I mean, if this movie isn't a good movie on its own, and if that first act isn't engaging and it hooks everybody and everybody's bought in and invested right out of the gate, like, you don't make two more of them. Like, if...
And the fact that it's a wildly simple story, if you, again, looking at it in a vacuum without, like, putting aside everything that we know now, it is a, like, such a simple story. I mean, even when you, like, look up the log line, like, if you pull it up on Disney Plus, I think the log line is, like, a farm boy intercepts a message from Princess Leia and goes on an adventure. Like, that's what happens. That's correct. And you don't have, like, it's extremely, like, the barrier to entry is so low. So that you can get like kids in on it. Like, I feel like we have kind of lost that in modern movie making, which is kind of sad. Just like make an entertaining, simple film.
We called it John Wick 1. All right. Just to bring this back to John Wick for a second. All right. Like,
every episode
we'll make it an official segment.
I did shit on John Wick 4 a lot in a previous episode, but John Wick 1 is, in that vein of like, you're just telling a story. This, all that movie is a man who got a dog from his dead wife that got killed by Theon Greyjoy, and he rages a one-man war that totally eliminates the Russian mafia in New York City. And there is a moment where he uses an obscure coin to rent a hotel room, and that
But that's not in the synopsis, though.
Yeah, like, it's not.
You're already into details that don't matter until you get there.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the beauty of John Wick 1. Like, I walked out of John Wick 1 being like, this is easy to understand. The action scenes are incredible. I had so much fun. The last thing I gave a shit about was, man, I wonder how this obscure assassin economy works. And you know what, like, kudos to George Lucas to have enough of a plan to make like that, to make the larger world work. But like, to your point, right, it's just like, these people are bad, and we are introduced to heroes, and then when we're reminded that how bad the villains are, it's like, see this ball, it's gonna blow up that planet over there.
That's it.
Yeah
we're gonna blow up what
more do you yeah like what more do you need to know about these guys are bad?
Well, even like the opening shot when you have like the ship looming over you and it's way bigger than the good guys, it's like, oh, bad, very big and intimidating,
which by the way is a hell of an accomplishment on ILM, because in reality that ship is actually much smaller. Like, the model is actually smaller.
Well, they're very good about this movie, like, really nails scale. Like, even later when you have the Millennium Falcon being pulled into the Death Star, it really puts it all into perspective.
Well, let's get into that, though. Let's get into some of the cool, ultimately practical effects that they did. Because, like, most of it's in camera, except for, like, the trench run.
Not a lot of it's on camera.
CG?
Not a lot. Well, there's no CG.
The 3D Tron looking trench run thing?
No.
Because
the only computer that existed in the original Star Wars movie was the computer that controlled the Dyson Flex.
The Dykstra Flex?
Dykstra
Flex. With all the cars.
Yeah. So like, the only computational power that was used in that film was controlling the rig that held the camera that shot all of the, like, because even when they comped it, what they did was use optical printers, which is a totally manual.
You're talking about all of the shots.
Yeah. When you compose them together.
The spaceship shots and stuff. Yeah. I'm talking about the trench run diagram, like when the guy's walking through the planet.
Oh, yeah, now that actually is CGI.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're right.
The weird 3D Tron looking, like, here's where you're going to fly. Like
the wireframe of, like...
All of that was, like, there's some Chicago Institute of Technology or something like that. But, no, all of the photography, yeah. Because, like, I will never not be able to not read an article interviewing John Dykstra. Like the, because like I barely wrap my head around how he did it. But hearing him talk about optical printing, and hearing him talk about the people that ran optical printing machines, because basically if there are four elements on screen, you shoot them all separately. And the Dykstraflex was the thing that like
made sure all the camera matches, all the camera movements,
all the camera movements matched perfectly. And then you set up and expose different parts, and then you stack those, basically stack those on top of them, and you run them through optical printers. But even that is like, that's an art, and that takes a light touch. I think I read an article just today before we started filming about where he called them magicians. And so it's like, but those are the guys that you never hear about, obviously, like the guy running the optical printer that made this shot possible. Because like, if you mess up one layer, if there's, 30 different elements on there, like if one of them screws up, you got to start over, because it's all physical stuff.
It feels like more magic today than I think it did even then.
Yeah.
Right.
It's MP3s versus a record player.
Yeah. 100%. Right. Cause like I now understand, like, first off, it's the bonus features of Star Wars that taught me what a garbage mat is. And it's like literally just taking like pieces of cardboard and putting it in just so you can like roughly block out all of the green screen except like, a small layer around the thing you're trying to key out, right? And apparently, and I don't know this because I haven't actually physically worked with film, but there's some kind of chemical that just removes blue, right? Yep. From like from a film, and give me the blue removal chemical. Like just pour this on the cellulite, and it's gonna get rid of everything that's blue. Because like to us, right, when we key something out and like in Premiere, it's like, okay, let me get the key effect.
Click on that. I didn't quite do it. Let me get the eyedropper
on there. Let me fuck with the threshold a little. With the threshold a little bit, and it's just like a computer just like, let me just do some math quick, calm down.
And then I'll just move a slider to decide how much of my hair I want to.
I don't understand how there's a chemical that is just like, that's, it's like a virus, like
a
chemical virus. It's like, that's blue.
A wax plate to sound like the Rolling Stones. Yeah. I do not understand.
That's science more than technology. That's why it's so confusing.
That's the thing. Like it's engineering as much
chemical
as it is filmmaking.
Engineering.
I mean, but between that and between optical printers and between like the Dykstraflex stuff and like how they, like it's a different side of the brain than I have. Like I don't have that side of the brain, but like that was filmmaking. That was like visual effects filmmaking in those days.
Let's say that you wanted to do that. You had to shoot like 7 things onto a roll of film, right? Like not only do you have to have like the Millennium Falcon, like let's say you had the shot with a Millennium Falcon in it, right? So you have to shoot the Millennium Falcon on blue screen. Then you have to take that negative of the Millennium Falcon on blue screen and you have to do 2 things with it. You have to make 1 copy that's just black and white, right? So it's just, here's the Millennium Falcon. That is the negative space and the white is the positive space, or vice versa, whatever one, right? The point is that you have to run that through the optical printer. So then it exposes the background, but it has the black where the Millennium Falcon is, because then you have to rewind that film and then shoot it again with the Millennium Falcon as it's photographed to fill in that spot where it was actually unexposed when they ran it through the first time.
But you have to shoot it again on a camera that's moving in exactly the same, that's what the Dykstraflex, that's why he got the Academy Awards and all that stuff, because he invented the system that programmed the cameras to move in exactly the same way. So the piece of film that's already been exposed that has the Millennium Falcon on it, they can then shoot it in
concert with the background
or with another. Usually it was the Star Destroyer was now in the background doing the thing. And then they would add those two together. And then they would shoot the plate that has just the planet back there or something. And they would add those two. And so you kept having to do that over and over and over again. And you do it with you know, you'd be lucky if you only have three things that you have to shoot. Like when it starts to get up into like the 15 or 20 or 30 or whatever elements on there.
We'll talk about it more, I'm assuming, on the Empire Strikes Back podcast. That's like they really,
yeah.
That
assuming
stuff up for
assuming
Empire.
You guys put the rest of Star Wars on your list too. Like we'll talk more about it. But then, I mean, think about by the time they got to Return of the Jedi and some of the Act 3 space battle in Return of the Jedi with everything just swooping in and out and like the motion that they got figured out at that point, like the, and that was just 6 years later.
This is not an expensive movie. I think it was like $11 million, which is maybe expensive for the time, but it's still kind of like low budget.
Yeah, I don't think it was cheap for the time.
It wasn't cheap,
but it was, it wasn't crazy.
No.
Wait, say that one more time.
Like $11 million in the 70s. I mean, it
and
was,
that's not cheap, but it's,
it was upper half.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean,
there,
listen,
might have been more expensive movies.
Alan
to be honest,
Ladd, he clearly was charmed by George Lucas, because like that dude definitely had to go to bat. It was like, it was enough money that they could afford to lose it, but it was not enough where it's just like, it wasn't a Corman picture.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing we can kind of talk about here, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but the other story for me about Star Wars is like the business side of it, and like George Lucas, the businessman, who, like, we talked a little bit about the merchandising thing, and he had an option to get paid $500,000 more, and he gave it up. He traded it for the merchandising and the sequel rights. There was the I mean, yeah, Alan Ladd had to pull some strings to get it finished. Nobody, including up to and including the cast and crew during filming, wanted to make this movie or thought it was any good at all.
No, they
literally nobody.
The actors would like genuinely make fun of this.
There are some great, and I think they were released on like the Blu-ray release of the special editions or the prequel trilogy or something. I think there was like a box set of all six that came out in like 2007 or something like that. But they had some incredible documentaries on there, and one of them was basically just a highlight reel of people giving George Lucas a hard time, which, like, everybody from Harrison Ford on down to the grips were like, the hell is this nerd doing? Like, I'm not, you know, these words don't make sense. And it's another reason that like, this is a movie that proves how, like, Harrison Ford is just straight up a star, because he can say these stupid words that are completely made up and nonsense sci-fi words and look cool. He looks cool talking about, like,
sounds
making
cool.
The jump to hyperspace, yeah, and whatever. And he makes them look and sound cool. And it's just this nonsense nerd stuff that's completely made up fantasy. And he comes out of it looking rad. He's a badass.
And, like, that's something I feel like all of them at a certain point, like, especially when you look at, like, Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher, at a certain point just kind of started doing their own thing. Like, especially knowing now what we know of Carrie Fisher's personality, I think at a certain point when she stops doing the weird accent that she does in the beginning of the movie, like, she's just being Carrie Fisher. Like, that's why it works so well, just because, like, she's being that kind of, like, stubborn kind of, like sass, like, you know, and that's why it works, because they were just doing what they wanted to do.
For Lucas and for Ladd and for everybody else that released this movie, that just to get this movie passable and out the door was like a war of attrition, because everybody thought it was dumb. Fox didn't have any faith in it. Fox originally booked it for 2 weeks. They originally booked it for 2 weeks because they had, I can't remember what it's telling that I can't even remember the name of the other movie that they were expecting to be their big summer release. And they were like, we'll put it out for 2 weeks or whatever. Sorcerer, Friedkin's Sorcerer, took over for it at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood. And people got mad, but nobody thought this movie was going to be anything. Even George Lucas, he went on vacation. He forgot that the movie was coming out that day, but depending on some of the stories that you hear. And like he was working and he took a break for lunch and he walked past a line of people waiting to go see the movie. And that surprised him. Like, he had no idea. Nobody knew this movie was going to be a success at all, much less.
Except for Spielberg.
Yeah.
And it was such an anomaly too, like, not like, because I feel like the 70s were a little more like auteur driven,
yeah,
and not so
this
much
was,
like,
this is what started to put an end to that.
Yeah, kind of, like, for better or worse. But also, it's like, if you look at sci-fi before Star Wars, it was so much more serious. Like, you have 2001 Space, like, we didn't really have sci-fi that was this fun and adventurous and simple.
There were some damn dirty apes that
but that's still deeper, I would say. Like, that is deeper than the first Star Wars.
That was a thriller more. I mean, this was like,
that was more, it was still more serious.
This was super fun adventure. Like,
that was not an adventure movie.
Yeah, nobody was running around like, hey, let's play Planet of the Apes. Like, a bunch of kids.
Damn you. damn you all to hell. Like little Scott Calora just running around. You guys want to play apes?
But you mentioned something in the middle of there about like changing how auteur, you know, the power of a director in a medium, and this sort of chipped away at it. Is there a bad side to the legacy of Star Wars for you guys?
I mean, there definitely is.
Yeah, we're living in it.
I mean, like, the thing is, I don't want to criticize 1977 Star Wars for it, because I think it was necessary in that time.
Right.
Like, you kind of needed that movie where parents could enjoy it and their kids could enjoy it, and you could, you know, make series out of it.
You needed to make a good movie. And what comes next, who knows? Like, I mean, I feel like we were just as likely to get a good Star Wars movie, and Lucas was like, you know, if he didn't have three other ideas that he wanted to do with this movie, like maybe there wouldn't have been a sequel, you know, like maybe he would have done the other two movies and then that would have been enough and great. I can move on and do something else. Like
we would have got Indy earlier.
I mean, Indy too, I think, is like one of those movies where it's like, it's a really good movie, but it set up some really bad habits. So that like, and I'm like, so that's why I'm kind of hesitant to kind of blame it for that, but it does bear some of the responsibility.
There's no way to have known.
It's not only that. It's not like Hollywood was ruined in the late 70s. It's more like Hollywood was ruined in the 2010s. It took a while for the things that I don't like about Hollywood to manifest itself.
I would say it was before the 10s, though. I mean, you had the prequels before.
But they
that wasn't Hollywood. That was independent cinema.
That was independent cinema. Also, it wasn't until like the late aughts where like the top 20 movies of the year just got completely dominated by sequels and IP movies. Like up until then, it wasn't unusual to have new IP or just like a...
Just a good movie. That everybody likes. Like that, and
everybody
that was
liked,
top 20.
And that was the top 20 movie. Now it's just like, you're not making the top 20 unless you have a book series that sold that has like 5 books and sold millions of copies. You're a sequel to the previously anointed IP, which is like Marvel, Star Wars,
which
DC.
Is now Star Wars.
Yeah. Or like any of that stuff. And there's no way George Lucas could have known that that was coming in 1977. And all I'm saying is that I think I'm grateful that it took 40 years for it to get.
We had a good run. Yeah.
But it was original. Like, but you're not wrong. Like, even when I look at like the box office like of 2023, I get really excited because I'm like, oh, Barbie, that's an original movie that's based on a wildly popular.
It's a 50-year-old toy.
It's a 50-year-old toy.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's rough out there.
And it's not Star Wars' fault.
No. And again, like, this was an original movie. Movie.
It's kind of Star Wars.
Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope's fault.
Yeah.
You're going to blame Star Wars?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can't start with Empire Strikes Back. It's a great movie. I'm just trying to say that, like, I guess like what I'm trying to say is now I don't understand how the current cinematic and environment is so toxic to new IP that no one's willing to roll the dice and invest in new IP.
Is there a version of Star Wars that happens right now?
I don't know.
Like something brand new that is, I mean, what's weird is like, I feel like Stranger Things might be the closest thing
that we've got to that.
Because like these things that are, you know, they can be phenomenon and they can have a week's worth of the news cycle and they'll be in the zeitgeist for a month or two and then something else pops up and then it goes away. Like Stranger Things has lasted a handful of seasons. I feel like it's a big legit thing that it could end up being. They could end up just keep making them forever.
Did someone say John Wick?
John Wick.
It does have a TV show, but that also was original IP in, like, what, 2014 was the first
Something
John Wick?
Like that, yeah.
And it just, like I don't understand why the John Wick model isn't being gambled on more. First John Wick cost $20 million, and then it took 4 movies for it to get a $100 million budget. And John Wick 4, despite all of my misgivings about it, still made like close to $1 billion at the box office, and that is organically grown IP in the modern era. And no one is looking at John Wick being like, how do I make the new John Wick? And it's just like, let me find an idea with some legs, give it $20 million and see if it works.
Well, I think you touched on it, which is movies are so expensive now. Like, we've gotten to this point where it's now
they're not though.
They are. No, they are. Like, blockbusters nowadays like don't cost less than $100 million, which is stupid.
Well, this is the thing. It's like there's the movie.
They're
people
start
are spending
less.
spending a lot of money on blockbusters, and that's the thing. Is that like it's the bet hedging of I'm going to make one massive bet instead of 10 smaller bets. Like I'm gonna put $300 million into one movie instead of $300 million across 7 movies, and I only need one of them to hit, and I'll get my money back. You know, so it's like, it's a weird, but yeah, I mean, the John Wick model
is just Star Wars model. Just it just seems weird because it was done 40 years later.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that like I interviewed Gareth Edwards, nothing to do with Rogue One, but I interviewed him for The Creator, which like didn't do great, but like he was talking about like pitching an original IP and how hard that is. And he pitched it and the studio was like, oh, that sounds really cool, but we don't have $100 million to do that. And he was like, no, guys, I can make it for a quarter of that. And they were like, oh, go ahead. Like, I think it is all, it's all risk versus.
It needs somebody. Like, and I feel like that's the kind of thing that A24 recently has talked about getting more into, like bigger tentpole kind of fare. But I think that's going to be their version of it. Like, I would like to think that they're sitting there saying like, why can't we get a John Wick?
I think there's an opportunity for it, and I just think they're smart
built
people
to do it.
Who are tastemakers.
It's you know, it's Disney and it's Warner's and it's all the big studios spending a ton of money on everything, and then it's the Jason Blums spending zero money on everything, and there's not a ton in between. But A24 is set up to do something like that. And Lionsgate, who did it with John Wick, you know, it's all of these like sort of sidearm things.
You can see the future of A24 right now. All they need is two, right? They just need two things to do well, and they'll build the IP off of that. And then it's just like, oh, well, Disney's going to acquire them for like $9 billion, like just like Pixar. You know, it's just like, okay, and they've managed to take on all the risk of developing new IP. They've proven that they have a couple. Great, we're going to absorb them for a couple billion dollars, and now that's ours.
And now it's going to be whatever. A24 is John Wick on Disney Plus.
I just keep on thinking of like the South Park capitalist Mickey Mouse. Like, huh? Yeah. You work for me now.
Yeah. I mean, they're starting to do that though. Like, they ordered a sequel to Talk to Me. Like, I think that's their path. Like, they make something really good that is a lower budget and really great on its own and has a big fan base, and then yeah, you can build off that.
I just,
like John Wick.
And to us all, our point is like, I think that all started with Star Wars.
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
When did Jaws 2 come out?
Not too much longer after Jaws. Let me look that up. Talk amongst yourselves.
I'm trying to figure out.
78. Like, came out 3 years after. So Jaws was 75. Jaws 2, 78. That's one that clearly doesn't lend itself to a universe.
Nope.
It's just like, we need how many massive sharks do we need?
The Meg 2 came out.
Yeah, yeah, and they had 3 sharks and an octopus in that one, and then a bunch of weird little lizard things.
I'm putting this out there. I do think that the Meg 2 poster is the greatest poster of the year. Best movie poster.
Might be. Is that the one with the giant shark mouth underneath the water?
No. It's the shark. Like, it's this huge shark that takes up the whole poster, and then you realize that the shark taking up the whole poster is in right behind a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, yeah.
So just, like, to establish scale that the T-Rex is, like, small in front of a...
I'm telling you, scale matters. Because you don't get how big the Death Star is until you see it pulling in the Millennium Falcon. Like, scale matters. I didn't think I had seen that poster, and then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, I have seen
that poster. Way to pull it back to Star Wars there. We started talking about the Meg 2 in our Star Wars. I feel like we got there organically, though.
I think we did.
Are we still talking about brilliant moments there?
But that's the thing that we started out this whole conversation with, is like, we could break down any scene in this movie if we wanted to, and it's been done before, and...
Like, I could say it's very pretty when he has that purple sky and the two moons.
Yeah,
he's
the
like,
twin
yeah,
sunsets
yeah.
and,
but
like,
I
the
wouldn't be the first
representative.
Person.
But, you know, that's the funny thing about Lucas, too, is, like, I think as broadly painted as his archetypes are in this movie, there are some... He does have the capacity to do some, like, really poetic stuff with, like, the twin sunsets and things like that, which...
I also think he, like, knows at least Luke and Han really well, because, like, as much as, like, we're talking about how, like, you know, they're... like Joseph Campbell, like the hero's journey type characters, right? Fundamentally, George Lucas is from Modesto, California, which is a farming town, right? So it's very clear he understands the plight of a boring farm boy. And at the same time, he was like the consummate like gearhead greaser in like the 70s. And because that's where American Graffiti came from. And he like famously got into like a really bad car accident when he was younger. And that's what caused him to like change like the entire direction of his life and be like, actually, I'm done like working on cars, I'm gonna make movies. So you could definitely see the elements of like Han Solo and Luke Skywalker in the early experiences of George Lucas growing up in Modesto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, it's almost kind of like copy and paste. Like, yes, that I'm sure George Lucas could relate to Luke, but that's why it kind of works, because every boy in a small town looking to for a bigger adventure can, like, you know.
I'm a boy from a small town.
Do you relate to Luke?
Not in the least.
He's a little shit.
Can we talk about that for just a second?
He's so annoying.
That whiny little bitch.
Terribly annoying Luke Skywalker is in the first part of this movie.
Oh, God.
He's just, I hate him.
Yeah.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done. Now, come on, get to it.
You go to Tosche Station and buy power converters and like gets them going nowhere. And like he's not.
You said I could join this year.
Yeah, he is not a fun guy to be around.
And you have reason to like Princess Leia, because like obviously she's introduced as this like. This
oh, she's out there making stuff happen.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like being tortured and being fine about it.
She's
yeah.
flipping the bird to the like space Nazis.
Right.
You know,
yeah. I recognized your foul stench as soon as I was brought aboard. It's like, oh.
And that's another line that like is actor delivery pulls that off. Yeah, yeah.
And like, let's be clear, right? That's just like her saying that to a Nazi, not her dad. We're unaware of the fact that like, fuck you, dad.
And by the way, she's been tortured by this point. Yeah.
By her dad.
Yeah. By her dad. And Han too, like he may not be a hero at this point, but he's still really cool.
That's why he's really cool.
All right. Because he's specifically not a hero.
Yeah. Let's be honest, right? Probably the most iconic set in the history of Star Wars is a fucking dive bar on Mos Eisley. And it's just here's this fucking hole in the wall, like just shitty bar with cheap drinks, and like here's a guy.
They don't really mind people's arms getting chopped.
Yeah,
off.
They don't even call that big a deal. They barely even call the cops.
They start the music right back up.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, nothing to see here. And then it's just like the guy with his fucking Monte Carlo and the part
sorry
and
about
a lot
the mess,
of
and, he
and
a
lot,
flips
lot
a
across
and
the street. And he's just like, all right, let's go.
I do love Scum and Villainy too. There's a bar in Hollywood that kind of, I think it's unlicensed.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not sponsored. It's called Scum and Villainy, and it just like recreates that bar, and it's just, you feel so cool.
Do they have that song on repeat?
I think they do.
The jizz?
I don't know if they're allowed to, but
yeah. Do they play jizz there?
They have really jizz. I forgot about jizz.
What do they retcon it to? What's
recently,
it?
I think it's just, is it jazz now?
No.
Is it just jazz?
Did we decide it's jazz?
I'm Googling retcon jizz.
Don't do it on your work computer.
I do love the headlines that are like, Star Wars quietly removed jizz.
Yeah. To be fair, that is a thing you want to remove quietly.
Yeah. Oh, it's jats.
Oh, okay.
It's jats, not jizz.
Do they play jizz? but that is such a
McClunky.
Cool set.
Anything specific we need to talk about here? I mean, we ran into Luke's annoying. We talked about Dykstra Flex. We talked about Han a bunch. We talked about the Meg 2. I think that's all the Star Wars.
Do we want to talk about all the clones?
Oh, the clones
the
are
Star
pretty
Wars,
funny.
The Star Wars clones?
Yeah, like, I mean,
is
we
it
wouldn't
imitators
have.
Imitators or
yeah.
the clones that.
No, not
show
the clone.
Up?
Not the clones. Not the Clone,
the clone
Wars,
Wars.
But, well, if you ask me, the Clone Wars of the clone is probably the best. Which is Battlestar Galactica.
Sure. Yeah, which is also a movie that like half the crew of Star Wars went to go work on, or a show.
Dykstra. I think that was like the thing that like...
He stayed in Hollywood specifically to work on that show. That was his next gig, I think.
Disney's clone.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we can't have Star Wars.
Can't beat him.
Can't beat him.
Buy him.
I will say, like I said earlier, I didn't really grow up with Star Wars, but I wish I had watched it because I would have thought Princess Leia was the coolest character on the planet. Like, I knew I would have been obsessed with Princess Leia if I had actually sat down and watched Star Wars as a child, and I wish I had. And credit to Carrie Fisher.
I have all my Han Solo fan fiction.
Do you, written or just read?
I have an outline.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a couple pages.
I can give you notes if you want. Yeah.
I got an outline. Fun fact, I pitched it to Joe Keery while I was peeing next to him in a bathroom.
You pitched Joe Keery on a Han Solo spec script.
Yeah.
That you only have an outline for.
Yeah, yes, I did.
What did he say?
He's like, I would have done that.
He's like, call my agent?
Whatever I can do to get out of this conversation at this urinal.
Well, it was at the time when like Stranger Things season one was just kind of blowing up, which was coincidentally right around the time that the casting of Solo was happening. And like we had it, this was back when Facebook Live was just paying people to be like paying brands to be live on the internet all the time. So we had Joel Keery come through and like we had to talk to him and I'm just like, yeah, so apparently, like, every handsome dude in Hollywood read for Han Solo. Did you do it?
That's actually like, true.
Yeah.
Like, every handsome dude in Hollywood.
And he was just like, yeah, I did. And then, like, later in the bathroom, like, we're peeing. And I'm just like, yeah, so I have the idea for a Solo movie.
You, as a guy who read for Han Solo you could probably get this made.
You're as close as I've ever come to anybody.
As I'm going to get my fanfic made.
Yeah.
Everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
All right, movie list. So Star Wars has been on predictably a lot of movie lists. Top 10 CGI moments from the last century, which the Trench Run briefing, the display thing that was in there. It's been on two versions of top 10 practical effects of all time, your recent one and the original one from years ago. The original version of top 10 heroes had Han Solo on it. He didn't make the cut for the updated one.
That's ridiculous. But,
well, because I rearranged the whole thing.
I understand. You're trying to shine a light on more obscure
people.
Exactly. You're trying to educate.
If you need a video to tell you that Han Solo is a fun guy, like that's not.
Yeah,
me,
that's
man.
Not. Yeah.
As long as you're like, well, we went with Luke this time. Yeah, that's when I would have a problem.
Top 10 Mary Sues of all time. Yeah. Luke Skywalker's up there.
That's
sound design. Made our sound design list. Ben Burtt, of course.
You know, we actually probably should talk more about him.
We should talk about Ben.
Darth Vader that. Alone.
I mean,
well, and R2 being a lovable and relatable character is all Ben Burtt.
All right, come on. And the red one. Come on. Well, come on, Red. Let's go.
It is funny because I watch everything with subtitles, and every time I watch like Star Wars, it's just like beeps, sadly. But like, it is crazy
beeps,
how much,
sadly.
Yeah. But like, how much emotion they managed to fit in. Like again, like I said earlier, like when R2-D2 is shot by the Sand People, you're like, oh no, not R2, and that's just beeps.
So I think that like,
dunk.
I think that Ben Burtt has like the, I don't want to say most significant contribution, but I will say he has the most recognizable contribution, which is if you took the sound of a lightsaber and played it to, I'm going to say, the majority of people in the developed world, and you were just like, hey, what's the sound? And you hear, boom.
Like, well, that and like the pew-pews of the blasters?
And that's what I was trying to say. There's probably about five of them, right? So it's the lightsaber. It's the sound of the TIE fighter. It's the R2-D2. It's the blaster, like the blaster bolts.
Like you could just play a and be like, oh, that's R2-D2. Mm-hmm. And half the people that listen to it would know what he was saying.
Yeah.
Like they could translate.
But I agree with you. It's so important to the movie. Like
it's like Mona Lisa level recognizable. Like if you showed a Mona Lisa to people, it'd be like, what is this? And they're like, oh, that's the Mona Lisa. And I think if you just like played the lightsaber ignition to people, they would just be like, Like the majority of people that would also recognize that that's a Mona Lisa would also be like, yeah, that's the lightsaber. And
the same thing with like, I think, did you mention Millennium Falcon? Just the sound of it flying and the, you know, the sound of going into to hyperspeed and hyperspace.
All of it.
All of it.
And again, like Darth Vader coming in hot with like his intro is so cool. Yeah. Like that's what part of what makes him so terrifying. It's like the visual presence, but then like, it's like, why is he breathing so
Did you ever feel bad for
David Prowse?
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Because like Prowse like shot that whole movie thinking he was going to be the voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah. I wonder when he found out. We could probably look that up.
I hope it wasn't when he went to go see it. I do know that like, so when they were shooting Empire, the line that they shot was, Obi-Wan killed your father.
Yeah.
So he went the
whole
time.
Only Mark Hamill knew what it was. Yeah. He was supposed to be reacting to.
Yeah. So he got fooled twice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Poor guy.
It does make me sad.
Ben Burtt for the win.
Ralph McQuarrie, you know, just visualizing the used future. What other obscure names do we have to just call out here? Because we need to establish our credibility not only as fans of Star Wars, but as a movie podcast.
Experts, filmmaking experts. So sound designs was one. Most iconic lines of all time. We did 100 most iconic lines of all time. May the Force be with you. Was
I thought you were going to say, but the power, I was supposed to go to Tosche Station.
Most iconic referenced fake town of all time, Tosche Station.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Top 10 opening shots of all time.
I love that opening shot.
Yeah. I love the crawl and then the pan down is great. I was really rooting for the last shot of Rogue One for the spaceship to fly past the crawl from the remote, but top 10 props, lightsaber was listed in the top 10 props. And then of course the one that nobody was mad at us for, top 10 Westerns.
Oh, that's funny.
Wait, did people,
you guys were being very,
we put it in top 10 Westerns
as
got,
it should be.
And got a lot of heat for it.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. Cause it's, yeah. I mean,
it's the best Western.
It's a Western, Western in a different it's just, setting.
It's, you know, I mean, it's a broader definition of Western than just like it's dusty, but it is dusty for like half the movie.
It
takes place in the desert. Yeah.
It is a Western in every sense of the word.
Yeah, it is very much a Western. Yeah. But anyway, like all that, that's when I stopped looking. There's bound to be more.
I mean, it's like Seven Samurai. It's
I
like,
could probably do top 10 lists it showed up on and still have some honorable mentions left over, but. And there's some more too that are for different Star Wars, like Empire shows up on some different ones. We did dogfights but that one went to, we did the one from Rogue One because the dogfight at the space battle at the end of Rogue One is real cool.
It's the best.
And you know, we can talk about it here too, because it used some stuff from A New Hope. Like it used some unused fighter pilot, footage, which is cool.
I mean, it's one of those movies where it like it impacted filmmaking so much that you can't really in any way like encapsulate.
If like Seven Samurai is the foundation of like action cinema, this is very clearly like the first floor.
Well, and we were talking about in the Seven Samurai episode, like, you know, if we don't have a Seven Samurai today that everyone copies, it would be Star Wars.
The one that didn't show up on is sci-fi.
That's
you did put it in
Westerns, and I think that's part of the reason why we got some heat for the Westerns, because I believe those lists were pretty close to each other. Really skipped. But you know, sometimes you just gotta troll some people. All right, did we miss any lists? Does it belong on anything else? I mean, we've done
best
a
scoundrels,
few, best wretched hives.
We must have a villains list.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, I've done it twice, actually. I've revamped it twice.
I have to imagine Darth is on there.
Darth Vader is probably on there.
No, he's not.
There's an interesting watch order that is, you watch Star Wars, then you watch Empire, then you go back and watch the prequels. You skip Phantom Menace, and then you just watch Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, and then you go back to Return of the Jedi. This isn't me. I saw this somewhere. I have no idea where it was now. But somebody, so the point that they were making was, in Empire Strikes Back, you know, Darth Vader is the galaxy's number one badass, and he's like, you know, I'm going to cut off your hand, and by the way, I banged your mom. just like the most amazing badass in the entire galaxy. And then the next movie, he's like, my boss is mean. And so like to go from, you know, Empire to Return for Darth Vader is kind of there's a switch that gets flipped. But if you go flashback to him and like his sort of tragic story back when he was a good guy, his sort of fall from grace, it softens that turn a little bit.
Not to go off on a tangent, I do think I have a really hot take about the prequels, which is if you're going to remake anything, you should remake something that wasn't great, but had a really good idea.
The Ocean's 11 rule of
right.
remakes.
Yeah. Like the story of the prequels, the story of Darth Vader is a gorgeous one when you like look at it on a page. Just remake it to be good.
Just do it. And we only need the one.
We only need the one.
Just the one. Don't make it a trilogy.
Don't do it. Yeah, yeah.
That's no moon. It's a space station.
It's too big to be a space station.
You know, I feel like it's time for tours.
We actually... I'm impressed with Tayo because he managed to find some that I didn't know.
A great many things.
Ready,
here we go.
Ready for Torfin?
Yeah.
All right. In the original draft of Star Wars, written in 1974, R2-D2 spoke in complete sentences.
That is true.
That's true. In the screenplay? Absolutely.
Yeah, that is true. Not only that, but he was kind of a bully.
Still is kind of a bully.
I give Anthony Daniels credit to how much of a bully R2-D2 still is, just from playing off of him. Well, don't call me a mindless philosopher.
One of his lines, too, is like, you're nothing more than a dim-witted, emotion-brained intellectual. Why you were created is beyond my logic system.
It's wonderful. Like, that's great. That's the kind of stuff that George Lucas would write, though. Like, he's not a subtle man. When it comes to writing.
You got one.
One for one.
Torf. The reason the bartender in A New Hope doesn't serve droids is because a droid killed his parents.
Oh, is that...
Like, based on other lore that we find out.
Canonical lore that is still official?
Oh, don't
or...
do that. That's no fun to split those hairs.
It's not fan fiction, but licensed.
Yeah.
I'm going to go false.
Okay. It's true.
Assuming it was going to be something different.
Yeah, I mean, fair. In 2017, a Star Wars anthology series titled From a Certain Point of View was released. It featured short stories, each told from the perspective of background characters in A New Hope. In the bartender's entry, it was revealed that as the droids leave the cantina, the bartender flashes back to how he lost his parents to battle droids during the Clone Wars, an incident which caused him to develop a hatred for droids.
So it wasn't his wife left him for a droid?
That would be a lot funnier.
I mean, that would be another possibility, yes, yeah.
Jude Law.
Can we talk from a certain point of view? Can we talk really quick? And I know that line's not in this movie, but it really highlights like what kind of asshole the Disney Plus series has turned Obi-Wan Kenobi into. Like, he's just a weird liar, you know? And it's so, he's hard to watch in this movie because it's like, why are you pretending you don't know R2-D2? Why are you going so far out of your way?
We haven't talked, that's the one thing that hasn't been retconned that pisses me off. Every time I see that scene.
I don't remember owning any droids.
C-3PO got his memory wiped.
Right, but R2-D2 like, did R2 not, and neither did Obi-Wan. No, that makes me mad every time I watch it.
It's so weird. And the point of it is like it was, we've talked about it a bunch earlier, but like it was made vaguely enough and they're just being like, what can we say?
Like, I don't remember owning any droids.
But like that's the one
I
thing
guess
that
he technically
doesn't.
Didn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't.
From
I didn't
a certain
own,
point of view.
I didn't own this droid.
Which the Obi-Wan saying from a certain point of view, which maybe like that's why they're not worried about it because like he was always this kind of weird asshole about half-truths.
But, like, I don't know. But, like, when you go back to the Darth Vader of it all those lines work.
No, he doesn't.
That scene doesn't.
He doesn't technically lie ever.
I guess.
But, like,
also, I feel
from
like,
a certain point of view.
Yeah. No, R2 makes, like, a sad noise in that scene, too, and it makes me upset.
Is it on the Disney Plus version? Because they probably added that, like, 3 weeks ago.
I think he subtitles beeps sadly.
Beeps sadly.
So, next Torf. Sir Alec Guinness, who played Obi-Wan, hated Star Wars.
True.
I feel like that's common.
There's like a 9 out of 10 chance. Whoever, just pick a name out of the credits, and odds are they hated Star
Especially
Wars.
Especially if it wasn't one of like the making of their career.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. For Alec Guinness, it was a paycheck job. Like for, you know, for Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, these were star-making
turns.
And he
had to have been drunk and angry the entire time. I don't know about the drunk, but angry for sure, because he's just like, I was in Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago, and what are you making me say?
I was in these deserts before making art.
Making goddamned art. That's
no, my most memorable line is hello there.
Now I'm in pajamas talking about some ancient, like, get at, what is this? Don't tell me what to do, nerd.
Yeah, no, he didn't like it. I mean, but then again, like
Obo
you said, like,
needs an Oreo.
Obi-Wan needs an Oreo.
But like you said, most of the cast wasn't into it. Yeah. But again, they got more out of it, I think.
They clearly got into it at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, cut to a couple months later, they're doing, like, garbage Christmas specials. Like, they got into it.
They were on board.
Yeah.
Garbage shoes is a really wonderful idea. What an incredible smell you've discovered. Oh.
Torf. And we're going back to us from a certain point of view for this one. In this anthology series, it is revealed that the trash monster, monster, you know what I'm talking about, the eye?
Of course.
That guy was actually an exile from its home planet hiding in the Death Star. True or false?
Oh, he was a stowaway?
Yeah.
Wait, say that one more time.
The trash monster was a stowaway.
Yeah. So the trash monster from A New Hope was actually an exile from its home planet hiding in the Death Star.
I'm going to go true. Because why would you have that there? On
it
purpose.
Is random.
Well, I mean, it could be breaking it down.
Breaking like it's down digesting all the yeah. stuff before they crush it?
Compress it, yeah. I guess true. Why not?
I'm going to go true. It feels like...
Hold on, wait a second.
It feels like
false?
The...
Is this false?
No, submit your answer and I'll tell you
no,
if it's true.
Because
like, wait, hold on. Are you going to try and tell me that the monster in the Death Star... Is the stowaway that has the titular? Like, does the monster just be like, man, I'm real tired
He's
of all
He's the titular
these,
New Hope.
All these Star Wars.
I'm
yeah,
the real
New Hope
real
actually
tired.
Refers to
real,
this guy.
Yeah, I'm real tired of all
well,
these Star
Well, he's dead
Wars.
Now anyway because the whole Death Star blew up. But no, I'm going to go true because that's exactly the kind of nonsense, like tragic backstory that we insist on giving bad guys.
I mean, it's what they gave the bartender.
Yeah.
I'll go true.
It's true.
It's false. But it's okay, but there is still more to the story than you think.
I'm tired
okay.
of all these Star Wars.
Okay. This is crazy. The trash monster was actually a force sensitive being who was attempting to baptize Luke. It is revealed that the trash monster is known as Ami, a force sensitive warrior who is stolen from her homeworld and sold to the Empire. When Luke enters the trash pit, Ami senses his force sensitivity and tries to baptize him in an effort to help him submit to the force. This is mistaken as a hostile act. As Ami baptizes him, she has a vision that Luke Skywalker will go on to do great things.
And that's why she lets him go?
Yeah.
Great. Love it. That's perfect.
Yep.
And exactly my read of that scene from watching the movie.
It was all of ours. Yeah. I was like, you know what? She is a force sense. She was trying to baptize him.
What intern wrote that?
It was somebody's best job of their entire life.
Yeah.
Whose son got again, to that, contribute
what
to
what Nepo
lore?
Baby wrote yeah. that?
Okay, yeah, but that was false. True or false? The word Sith, Palpatine, and Ewok is never spoken in the entire original trilogy.
That is outside the scope of this.
No. Well, there's not a lot you don't know about Star Wars. So.
Ewok's the only one I'm not sure about, but I'm going to go true because I'm pretty sure Sith and Palpatine don't get mentioned at all.
Yeah. Not. He's just the Emperor, and I'm going to go true.
It's true.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think this is the last Torf. Lucasfilm owns the trademark to the word droid, which I'll just give
that
you a hint.
True.
That is true. That is true. This is not the true or false
okay,
part.
Okay. Yeah.
Hold
relax.
On. Reel it in. this term replaces robot and android in the Star Wars. The terms robot and android are never spoken in Star Wars A New Hope. True or false? That's the
true.
Test part.
True. Yeah,
that's
just
true.
Droids.
That's false.
What did they say?
Robot?
Luke Skywalker called C-3PO and R2-D2 robots on one occasion in A New Hope. He says it instead of droids in front of the destroyed sandcrawler before going back home. So he does call them robots.
Hmm. Okay. Which, by the way, that scene in the destroyed sandcrawler, when he comes back after finding Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, and Obi-Wan is having C-3PO pile up the bodies of the Jawas and burn them?
Yeah.
That's fucked up. And Obi-Wan's just, like, standing there watching C-3PO toss Jawas onto a pile of burning Jawas.
Also, we haven't talked about how quickly Luke gets over seeing his makeshift
yeah,
parents
he
die.
He never liked them anyway.
Well, he's trying to get out.
Yeah. So let them die.
He did turn the corner into being, like, okay killing people real mm-hmm. fast.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, he never liked
No.
Owen and Beru. And neither did I. Beru never did anything wrong.
No, Beru's fine. I mean, Owen's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, he's an overbearing farm
Although
guy.
I think they're a little humanized in Obi-Wan for all the things that you don't like
when
in Obi-Wan.
When is Joel Edgerton again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Joel Edgerton in Revenge of the Sith was hilarious.
That's all for Torf, though.
Okay. Thank you for the Torfs.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Lars, this is my girlfriend, Varu.
Hello. I'm Padme.
I guess I'm your stepbrother.
Well, we've been talking about the Meg 2 for so long now. We've only got time for one more segment, I believe, Cal.
Oh, I forgot to think about this.
Oh. Who would Nicolas Cage be in Star Wars?
Oh, I hadn't thought about this, but I now know the answer.
Is it Tarkin? That's
yes.
mine.
Yes. Yeah, it's Tarkin.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Grand Moff
like
Tarkin.
Modern Nick Cage is Tarkin?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see.
I can
dig it.
I think Nick Cage, he didn't have to be as old as Cushing was. But like,
Tarkin's a good one.
Tarkin. Mm-hmm. Because Cushing was great, like that quiet, very refined sort of evil. And
well,
like,
he's a Nazi.
Yeah. And like, that was scary in its own way. But like, there's an interesting way to, I don't think I like it better. I like it also, you know?
Yeah.
But because like, I think adding Cage's sort of, there's like an unhinged kind of thing lurking underneath it. You give him some like Castor Troy energy on top of the Tarkin Nazi energy. I think would be an interesting way to go for Tarkin, but I don't know who else I would, cause like there's those Empire goons sitting around the table, the conference room in the beginning that Cage would have fun doing, but they come and they go, like they're too small.
There's the guy who like is very making fun of Darth Vader for his, like,
yeah, the guy who gets choked
religion.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy and the guy he's arguing with mm-hmm. in that scene.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want him to replace Harrison or Mark in any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, I mean, Tarkin, probably.
There's not much else.
I'm going.
Are you
going
to say Han?
No.
Okay.
God, no. Jesus
Christ. You're rearing up for a hot take.
No, I'm putting him in as, like, Cornelius Evazin, right? Like, he's the... do you know who he is? Like, the doctor? That, like, he's just, like... He's wanted, and like he's what, like
yeah, like, he's got the death sentence on
yeah.
12 systems.
Systems. So
this is a guy from Rogue One too, right?
Ponda Boba, right? Like the guy that gets his arm cut off by Obi-Wan in the cantina scene. Well, when they're giving Luke a hard time, like the guy that's just like he's wanted in 7 systems. That's Nicolas Cage for me.
I would love to see that. I would just like to see a little bit more of him.
I don't want to replace Peter Cushing.
No. I don't necessarily either, but I feel like that's where you put him if you have to put Nick Cage in. Because I want some mileage out of my Nick Cage. Like, otherwise that's a cameo and it takes me right out of the movie. Like, give him a role.
Well, that's the thing about
this
game.
But a cameo in 77, he would have been a nobody.
I don't know. Like, whenever we play this game and I try to put him in a small role because I don't want him in a big role, to your point, it takes me out of it.
I think we have to caveat it of how famous he would have been and what version of Nicolas Cage. Because, like, a young Nicolas Cage would not have been like, oh, look, there's Nicolas Cage. It takes me out of it, you know?
One of Luke's buddies that got cut out of the first 10 minutes of the movie.
He doesn't like you.
I'm sorry.
I don't like you either.
Where's it rank for you guys?
It's my 41.
41.
So top half.
Top half. Okay. Cal?
Me? Oh, this is high for me. This is number 3.
Number three.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a movie. Like I said, I think I've seen this movie more than any other movie.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no small amount of heartstrings playing into that.
I love Han Solo, man. This is favorite.
I mean, that's the
Han
list,
is,
yeah.
Han is my favorite fictional character of all time. Like, this movie... huge Mount Rushmore in my childhood.
I got some great news for you guys. Dan did not have this ranked.
Are you serious?
Of course he didn't. It got taken by 3 amigos.
Yeah, the fact that he has 3
take it
amigos.
Easy.
It got bumped from...
I had it at 77.
Oh,
which
wow.
Maybe I was just confused and I just wrote down the year it came out, but I had it at 77. So not, I mean, you know.
You guys are all high.
I don't know. I've gotten softer on Star Wars over the years.
I really thought I was going
to
be like...
trying to say, like, this IP-driven Hollywood is ruining things for you?
It's ruining things for me. We had that discussion already, like, an hour and a half ago.
Or you might like other Star Wars better. Which...
It's entirely... I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to figure it out. But either way, 77, honestly, anything in the top 100.
What'd you rank...
Independence Day was number 15.
Yeah. What was Three Amigos for you?
50-something, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, and that's the great part about being in season 2 of this show, is now we can start to really judge each other
based on
where things rank versus other things.
There's a lot of divergence there. So it's 3 lists, 3, 41, 77.
Yeah. Like, let's see where
around
it ends
the 50
up.
Mark, I would say.
20.
Heyo.
That's higher than
it is at 20. And listen, I'm not going to bother with the strike folder on this one. I don't think that's even a discussion.
No,
because there's no way you will allow it.
I will not. No,
at number three.
So do I need to filibuster right now?
Number 20. No, I'll save you the effort of filibustering.
Because there is a very famous Star Wars filibuster that I would probably quote.
You just go. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, thanks for talking about Star Wars. Any last parting thoughts about Star Wars?
It's a good movie.
Any last parting thoughts about The Meg 2?
It's a good poster.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Great, we did it. And thank you for watching, for hanging out with us while we're talking about Star Wars for a real long time, I feel like. And of course, thank you to Tayo Yakin for, by the way, another outstanding
incredible
3D printed Darth Vader in a plant. I'm not going to touch it, but do you think that the plant is also 3D printed?
It does look fake.
Okay, careful. Anyway, thank you to Tayo for the Darth Vader. Thank you to Jamie Parslow for turning all of these cameras on, going through the trouble of turning lights on as well. Ryan Franzen, once again, the only important one of us that's working today. Dan?
Didn't even have it on his list.
Didn't even have it on his list. Star Wars.
So Star Wars just can't even thank Dan.
Just
George Lucas
never
himself.
Forget.
George Lucas himself has no reason to thank Dan. So neither will we.
Did he have Raiders on his list?
I doubt it.
I mean, probably. He did.
Who knows? I don't know. It's all slander at this point. But tune in next week. Next week, we're going to be continuing season two with Disney's Robin Hood, the animated one from the 70s.
Oh, that's fun.
So we did not.
Finally, we get an animated film. Yeah. That's the first animated film that we've done, right?
Oh, yeah.
Roger Rabbit was partially.
That's true. Yeah. There you go. First fully animated film. So come back for that next week. In the meantime, stay safe. Be good. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you. That feels like something we ought to say.
There you go.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the spirit?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.